Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about how Montanans are feeling a week into the phased reopening plan, the Keystone XL oil pipeline, and how or when schools plan to reopen. It's Friday, May 1st. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montanans who are self-employed, independent contractors, or gig workers impacted by COVID-19 are now receiving unemployment payments. Rachel Kramer reports.
Brenda Nordland, acting commissioner of the Montana Department of Labor and Industry, said her team has sent out approximately $22 million in payments to over 7,000 Montanans since Tuesday evening.
So that is a big success, and there'll be more payments to come as we continue to work through the claims that have been filed there.
Nordland says more than 9,000 self-employed Montanans have filed since April 22nd. People using direct deposit should expect to see the funds within 2 to 3 days, if not sooner. People who receive checks should expect to see their benefits within the week. Self-employed workers who are eligible for unemployment benefits under the CARES Act also qualify for the additional $600 per week stimulus payment. Nordland said the department's unemployment division has sent out over $2 million worth of payments to nearly 90,000 unemployed Montanans since March 15th. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A Montana judge has rejected a request by a group seeking to collect electronic signatures in an effort to qualify two recreational marijuana issues for the 2020 ballot. District Judge John Larson of Missoula ruled yesterday the governor's emergency orders related to the coronavirus do not prevent traditional signature gathering for ballot initiatives. New Approach Montana is gathering signatures for an initiative to make the use of recreational marijuana legal and taxable, and for a constitutional amendment that would allow the state to set a legal age for the use of recreational marijuana. Larson also rejected their request to extend the July 17th deadline. The Montana National Guard on Monday started building a mobile medical facility for non-COVID-19 patients in case regional medical centers see a surge in new illnesses caused by the novel coronavirus. Kayla DeRoche reports.
Around 30 National Guard members construct walls inside the Expo Center at Metro Park in Billings. When done, the walls will form roofless back-to-back cubicles with curtains instead of doors. The officer in charge, Major Juan Torres, says the spaces will include electricity and some plumbing.
It's going to be as comfortable as a room for patients as we can possibly make for them.
This alternate care facility is one of many the National Guard is building across the United States in case local hospitals see an uptick in COVID patients and need a separate space for non-COVID and non-acute patients that would prevent exposure to the virus. Torres says construction in Billings should conclude next week, after which the facility will be ready for transport.
We can pack this thing up and bring it where anybody needs it.
The National Guard says the mobile care facility costs around $140,000. As of yet, there aren't any immediate plans to use it. The Guard is also building alternate care facilities in other states, including Connecticut, Florida, Vermont, and Washington State. The state of Montana also signed off on an alternate care structure in Kalispell, which the National Guard says is a project through the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
The novel coronavirus outbreak is impacting new teachers' ability to get licensed in Montana. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports over 200 educators with provisional licenses may not be able to teach next fall.
A provisional teaching license allows degree holders who meet most of the educational requirements to become a teacher to provide classroom instruction for 3 years as a student teacher while they complete the additional college courses they need to get a traditional teaching license. In order to do so, they also need what's called a praxis test, administered by the nonprofit Educational Testing Service.
And of course, with the COVID-19, they had to begin closing down their testing location somewhere in the time frame of mid to late March.
Montana Office of Public Instruction Educator License Manager Christine Thatcher says about 230 student teachers in the state hold provisional licenses that are set to expire in June. Without taking the praxis test, districts could lose those educators in the fall.
You know, the 230 is not a big number, but it's not minuscule either.
The state licenses roughly 1,600 educators every year, but provisional license holders are still important in the state, which has had long-standing issues attracting and retaining qualified teachers. The Montana Office of Public Instruction plans to ask the State Board of Education in May to give student teachers another year to complete their praxis test. The board is likely to vote on the waiver in July. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Financial leaders in Montana say the majority of loan applications for the Federal Paycheck Protection Program have been processed after some major roadblocks earlier in the week. Rachel Kramer reports.
Brent Donnelly, the Montana District Director of the U.S. Small Business Administration, said over 5,500 loan applications in Montana had been approved as of Thursday morning with the second round of federal funding for the Paycheck Protection Program. Donnelly told lawmakers during an Economic Affairs Interim Committee teleconference Thursday that he and his team recently checked in with lenders and banking associations in the state to see if they still had a backlog of applications.
The general consensus was almost all the banks, at least that reported back, had most of their backlog processed or were just finishing up the last few handful of loans, anywhere from 2 up to maybe 15 loans, and they were just working on either incomplete applications or new applications coming in the door.
The PPP provides forgivable loans to small businesses and nonprofits to cover up to 8 weeks of payroll, rent, mortgage, interest, or utilities. Nearly 13,500 loan applications in Montana, totaling almost $1.5 billion, were approved in the first round of funding. Congress recently approved a second round of funding, which became available Monday morning. But a flood of loan applications overwhelmed the online system. Donnelly said part of the problem was that the SBA was allowing some lenders to submit large batches of loan applications.
Like up to 15,000 loans at a time.
He says the SBA removed that option after the major logjam Monday. Donnelly said around 30% of the new funding had already been used nationally as of Wednesday evening. Melanie Hall, Commissioner of Banking and Financial Institutions, said the average approved loan size in Montana was $100,000. She said most approved applicants have already received funding. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
The Crow Tribe is extending its stay-at-home order to May 14th because of continued concerns due to the novel coronavirus. In an executive order issued yesterday, Chairman A.J. Not Afraid writes, "It's essential for tribal members and residents to stay at home to the maximum extent possible to protect public health and human safety on the Crow Reservation. Businesses on the reservation accepting essential services will remain closed another 2 weeks. Public and private gatherings of any number of people are prohibited. Out-of-state travelers are required to self-quarantine for 14 days when returning to the reservation." Montana Governor Steve Bullock lifted a statewide stay-at-home order Sunday. The Crow Tribe has been under a stay-at-home order since March 28th. Other tribal nations in Montana, including Blackfeet and Fort Belknap, are also under local closure orders. This week, tribal members who protested the Keystone XL oil pipeline construction earlier in April submitted statements to a federal judge that they witnessed workers breaking social distancing protocol. As Kayla DeRoche reports, the protesters say this backs up their concern about construction workers bringing COVID-19 into the area.
Angeline Cheek, an enrolled member of the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes, and an Indigenous justice organizer, was one of three tribal members to submit statements to Great Falls Federal Court Tuesday. She told YPR News shortly after their protest in Phillips County that the group observed workers failing to follow social distancing protocol.
They weren't wearing any type of masks. They were standing next to each other.
Cheek is involved in an ongoing case that tribes brought against pipeline developer TC Energy and the federal government for allegedly violating historic land treaties by building the Keystone XL pipeline. The plaintiffs also submitted photos showing workers standing shoulder to shoulder, although it's difficult to tell whether they're wearing masks due to photo quality. TC Energy says it put a protocol in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19, which includes social distancing, a 14-day quarantine, and health checks. In a statement to YPR, spokesperson Sarah Rayburn writes that TC Energy's workforce continues to follow site-specific safety plans. She also writes TC Energy has coordinated with local city and county leaders and consulted with multiple health services for advice on best practices. There are currently no cases of the COVID-19 illness in Phillips County, where construction work is occurring, or in Valley County, where Keystone XL workers are housed. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
As Montana wraps up its first week of the phased reopening plan, families across the state are feeling a whole spectrum of emotions as Main Street businesses unlock their doors and people leave their homes. Rachel Kramer spoke with a handful of people whose outlooks range from readiness to caution to hope.
For more than a month, Josie Reynolds has been working from home on her family's ranch near Townsend while also helping her kids with online learning.
It's super challenging.
Part of the challenge is that they don't have internet set up at home.
So all I have to work with daily is my little hotspot on my phone, and I have three kids that access it, plus I use it for my work. And thankfully, the school had a computer and iPad we could borrow because I didn't even have computers for them. So it's been a huge learning curve.
But Reynolds says she's actually relieved the school district decided this week to continue with online learning for the rest of the year. She says it would be harder for everyone to make the adjustment of going back before summer break, and she says her kids actually love learning from home. Reynolds says she does feel bad for her younger brother, who's a senior in high school, and she isn't sure what's going to happen with the graduation ceremony.
We're in her rodeo, so my family's planned like a big team roping graduation party for him. We tentatively have it scheduled for like the middle of May, but we also have a backup date in July, so it may just get pushed back.
Reynolds says she's ready for businesses to open back up and for life to feel more normal. But on the Fort Belknap Reservation, Camille Stein supports a more cautious approach. The reservation is waiting to reopen for at least 2 more weeks in an effort to protect elders and vulnerable populations.
Right now, we're hunkered down and people are really supportive of that. And so I guess it's really seeing what happens on the state and national level.
Stein says one of the bright spots over the last 6 weeks has been being able to spend more time with her kids, who are usually busy with sports year-round.
Well, my kids do track, they play basketball, they do tournaments in the spring, and they swim in the summer. So that's actually something we're kind of looking at too, we're nervous about, and would we even want to send our kids?
In Livingston, Dale Sexton has an optimistic outlook for the post-COVID world. He owns Timber Trails, a small outdoor specialty store, and last week he and a business partner purchased Dan Bailey's Fly Shop. He says the historic shop has been a foundational part of the community and the international fly fishing scene for decades. When asked if it was scary to buy a business during a pandemic,
yes. Yeah, it was actually. I mean, who does that in this kind of environment, right? But as a friend of mine described, sometimes when everybody's running away from something, sometimes that's the time to run towards it.
He says the purchase has been 3 years in the making, and in some ways, market pressure from the pandemic sped up the process. The plan is to reopen the fly shop this summer after some renovations. Sexton says he hopes some aspects of life right now won't change as the pandemic subsides. He's valued the extra time he's been able to spend with his two daughters.
I've been trying to increase their cooking independence, and we've been doing a lot of baking together and a lot of bike rides, and they're almost beating me at horse and basketball.
Sexton says he's been talking to his staff about maintaining a later opening time at Timber Trails so that they can continue spending more time with their families in the morning.
I'm looking forward to coming out of this in some kind of metamorphosis that makes us all better. I'm not sure what that is exactly.
That's not the case for quilt shop owner Shirley Wilson near Canyon Ferry.
With limited openings and those types of things, we can let off some of this steam and get back to sort of normal.
For Wilson, that means people can meet up with friends and family, go shopping, and eat in restaurants without concern. She says she recently went to Costco in Helena and noticed millennials were wearing masks, whereas she and other people with gray hair weren't. When asked why she thinks that is,
this is not the first crisis that has come through America in our life. This is the first one we have shut down everything for. That bothers me in some ways, but that's what the current rule is.
Wilson says the grass will get green, dandelions will come up, and rose bushes will bloom. She's looking for the light amid the dark place we've been in the last few weeks. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A new report shows Missoula's growing population combined with a tight housing supply continues to drive high demand and ever higher home prices. Housing prices may dip in the short term due to the ongoing novel coronavirus pandemic. The long-term effects on real estate are still unclear. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
The Missoula Organization of Realtors Brent Wahlberg can summarize last year's local housing market using only four words: tight supply, high prices.
A competitive market, bids at full price, over asking, competitive sales situations, a lot of the same trends that we've been reporting in the previous few years.
The MOR released its annual housing report Thursday detailing trends in the local market. This year's report was postponed by a month due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Missoula County's population grew by almost 10% from 2009 to 2018. That, combined with a year-over-year flat construction pace, increases housing demand. Wahlberg says a tight supply helped push the median sales price, where half the sales are above that price and half are below, to another record high last year.
We had a peak median sales price, once again, of $315,000 for homes in Missoula. And that represented an 8.6% median price increase in just 1 year.
Through most of this year's first quarter, there were no indications those trends would change anytime soon. Then COVID-19 hit.
We don't really know fully how this is going to completely impact the market. What we are noticing, especially in the month of April, sales volume is going down.
Listing activity started dropping just as Montana's COVID cases started mounting earlier this month. Wahlberg says sale activity will most likely follow suit.
We are probably going to see 10 to 15% under where it was at April last year. But the months that's going to be more telling for the impact on actual sales are going to be when you look at how May does and how June does.
The Missoula Organization of Realtors report finds that once again, affordable housing remains beyond arm's reach for many Missoulians. Wahlberg says the supply of homes priced at roughly $250,000 is still tight. Meanwhile, there's a growing supply of homes priced from $450,000 and up. He's noticing no significant changes to lending practices at small local banks. He is, however, seeing some changes at larger banks as many people are unemployed due to the recent stay-at-home order and continued social distancing guidance.
Lenders usually do an employment check a week or two before closing to confirm borrowers still employed. I had an instance just this week where the lender confirmed the morning of the closing before releasing funds. Lenders are probably going to be collecting a little bit more information, provide a little bit more scrutiny to things, and you could start to see some programs come and go.
Just over half Missoulians who live in city limits are renters. Wahlberg says it's tough to predict how the pandemic could affect the local rental market if it continues to affect people's ability to pay rent.
Could that mean rental prices go down? Possibly. On the flip side of things, you could potentially see more homes at or below median sales price come up for sale.
But Brent Wahlberg says Missoula's longtime seller's market is well positioned to rebound once the worst of the pandemic is behind us. He says a lot of parcels of land along the airport corridor are sold and poised for future subdivision development. He says a strong recovery in the housing sector will almost certainly lead to an impressive ripple effect across the rest of the local economy. That long-game optimism, however, is tempered by the short-term outlook for Montana from the director of the Bureau of Business and Economic Research at the University of Montana.
At the moment, we're estimating that we're going to see a personal income drop of about just shy of $4 billion, which is somewhere north of a 7% decline in economic activity. That's averaging over the whole year, 2020.
Patrick Barkey says that economic contraction will likely be especially pronounced this spring through the summer. Less certain is the outlook for the recovery, but BBER's best guess right now suggests that could happen during the last 3 months of this year. What's all that mean for Montana's housing sector? That's tough to predict with certainty, but Barkey says the pandemic's lockdown phase has put a dent in the real estate industry's ability to show homes. Industry reps agree, but say they're increasingly using technology to do that. Still, Barkey says these new complications may prompt some sellers to sweeten the pot to entice buyers.
Briefly, the power has moved a little bit over to the buyers who are willing to navigate the complexity of the real estate market. You know, we are in a recession, and it doesn't sound like a good time, from my point of view, for buyers to be getting loans and so forth. So you would expect that there's going to be a hit on real estate markets in terms of demand. What will that do to prices? Well, I expect that will soften the price growth.
Barkey is guardedly optimistic that residential construction will ultimately fare better, but he's hesitant to make any firm predictions given the unpredictable nature of the COVID-19 pandemic. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Many school districts across the state have already decided to finish the school year with remote and online learning due to concerns over the novel coronavirus. They're beginning to make plans for how they will reopen their doors next fall. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has been looking into how schools are making decisions amid Montana's phased reopening. He spoke with Corn Cates Carney.
So, Aaron, when Governor Steve Bullock announced last week that schools had an option to reopen their doors May 7th, school boards began scheduling meetings to make that decision. What have you been hearing about how those decisions are going so far?
You know, schools aren't required to report what they decide, so there isn't anyone at the state really tracking this. But I've spent most of my week checking school websites, social media pages, and making some calls. And out of about 120 districts I looked at, roughly 70 have either already decided to close out the year remotely, or their superintendents are recommending that. A handful of those schools do plan to offer some in-person services by appointment, like Libby and Troy. There are still many that haven't made decisions yet, but most districts don't seem inclined to reopen, something state education officials and education associations say they're also hearing.
For the districts that are deciding to keep their doors closed, stay with online learning, what are you hearing about why that decision is being made?
You know, the biggest thing is that it would just be too hard to comply with some of the guidance that Governor Steve Bullock gave schools, like limiting class sizes, keeping the same groups of kids and staff together each day, and screening students and staff for fever and other COVID-19 symptoms. Larger AA districts in Billings and Missoula say this would be especially difficult, and at least in the case of Missoula County Public Schools, the county health department said that its nurses don't have a ton of capacity to help the district with screening students or to do contact tracing in schools, which can be really, really complicated. Smaller and medium-sized districts also say it would be really hard to reopen right now. Matt Jensen is the superintendent for the Big Fork School District in Flathead County, and he's the president of the Northwest Montana School Superintendents Group. He's been troubleshooting with his fellow supers how schools in the region could reopen this spring, but he said they didn't have to get too far before it became nearly impossible.
You know, first, just how do we get students in the building? And so you have temperature screenings or symptom checks before students come in. How many can you screen at a time? How many people do we have trained to screen people? And then do those people conducting the screenings, do they have the proper PPE? So the answers to those first two questions are no.
This has been a big change, not only for teachers and students, but also parents. They're seeing a lot more of their kids at home, sometimes doing homeschooling. What are parents saying about finishing up the school year remotely? And are you hearing they're happy that districts are making that decision?
For Jensen, he says superintendents across the northwest corner of the state have received support from parents and staff on this. He says parents don't feel roughly 20 days of school is worth the risk. And many districts across the state are soliciting input from parents to inform their choices as well. And as we've seen, many are choosing to keep their buildings closed.
And are there any schools that are opening up for the remainder of the year?
I was able to track down two districts that are moving in that direction, one that has already made the decision to provide a mixed model, and another one that is likely to do the same. Circle Public Schools, which serves about 200 students, is out in northeastern Montana. Superintendent Preston Wentz is recommending that the school board approve his plan to bring certain grade levels in on different days. This is how he described that plan at the high school level.
They go through a modified schedule in the mornings, and then every afternoon would be open to any high school student to make an appointment with teachers to get a little extra help or pick up maybe what they've missed during this time and kind of just support, literally.
Wentz said the elementary and middle schools would follow a similar format. He added that all of this is voluntary and that some parents plan to keep their kids home if the school board approves his plan. And Fromberg Public Schools south of Billings has already decided to bring staff back into the building and students who are struggling with online classes.
And what about next fall? Do districts think they'll be still dealing with some of these issues, social distancing, remote learning next school year?
The short answer is yes, although what those district plans will look like in action largely depends on what phase of Governor Bullock's three-part plan we're in at that point. Bullock has said that there's no timeline for when we will move out of phase one. The big sticking point for school districts, if we're still in that phase, is limiting group sizes to 10 people. This is what Missoula County Public School District Superintendent Rob Watson had to say about that.
So we would have to, like, do some double shifting and, you know, maybe bring half the kids in the morning, half kids in the afternoon or something like that. And so, but if that restriction is lifted up to 50, then maybe it just provides more flexibility for our planning purposes. So we're not going down too far into the details yet because we need to see how this sort of plays out and what sort of restrictions are still in place.
Governor Bullock did provide some guidance for schools to reopen, but much of it seemed to be directed at schools potentially reopening this spring. Has he given more guidance on what school reopening could look like for next year?
Bullock's office hasn't, but state education officials and education associations have been applying the governor's general guidance for schools to all three phases of his larger plan, and that's mostly based on considerations of group sizes. The Montana Office of Public Instruction and School Administrators of Montana released an 11-page document Wednesday detailing all the considerations districts should take into account depending on where things are at. So if we're in phase two of the governor's plan, which says groups up to 50 people are safe, classes will likely move on as they normally would, but extracurricular activities like sports games would still be discouraged. According to that guidance under phase three, extracurricular activities could resume, but on the flip side, that document says districts should monitor things closely and be ready to take a step back if COVID-19 cases pop up.
Aaron, thanks for your reporting.
Thanks for having me.
That was Aaron Bolton speaking with Corin Cates Carney of Montana Public Radio. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for You Early Birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.